When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans, send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th, and never miss a meme or milestone, all protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Checking off the boxes on your to-do list is a great feeling. And when it comes to checking off coverage, a State Farm agent can help you choose an option that's right for you. Whether you prefer talking in person, on the phone, or using the award-winning app, it's nice knowing you have help finding coverage that best fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of The Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show. This is The Rich Eisen Show.
You've got to be kidding me. I can't believe what I just saw.
Sack! Ball out in Atlanta! Scramble, score it!
Live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
64 and sweet butter!
Today's guests, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer, and your phone calls, latest news, and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Overreaction Monday, our podcast, is ready for you to take in on our YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Love looking down and seeing every phone line lit. We'll get to your phone calls in a second. Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated is going to join us in about 15 minutes' time to tell us the status of Joe Burrow's toe and whether or not the Bengals might actually make a phone call to the Atlanta Falcons to see just how expensive Kirk Cousins might be, or do they believe in Jake Browning as much as I do? That's how I started the program. Then I think what Jim Moore Sr. said back in the day, and this is one of our favorite early drops. You have to go deep in the archives for this one, yeah. Mike Del Tufo.
Season is not over.
What he said as he was covering the Saints from New Orleans a few years ago.
Feels like you're ready to put in adoption papers on Jake Browning.
No, no. I'm just saying I wouldn't jump and call Terry Fontenot of the Falcons just yet and say how much for Kirk Cousins.
But, Rich, if you were a Bengals fan, I'm sure you wouldn't feel that way.
Well, I think Jake Browning did very well in 2023 when Burrow went down. And I think he's got it. And it's not like Ja'Marr Chase was waiting to get thrown a football yesterday. Okay, T. Higgins was making plays. This guy can get the football to the rod guys, and let's just see, just protect him. That's what I said in hour one. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Let's take Jimmy in San Antonio. That's line five for those scoring at home.
Hey.
What's up, Jimmy?
Ay, Dios mío.
What's going on, sir?
Jimmy,
well,
what's going on?
Okay, I have a quick overreaction. The red zone commercials, it wasn't that bad. I think people thought it was going to be Frank Thomas and Doug Flutie pushing pickleball pills. It was quick.
Okay.
They were little hits. I didn't notice a difference.
Okay. And by the way, everybody blames ESPN for that. ESPN and the NFL, the deal is not, it hasn't been approved. ESPN has nothing to do with this right now. Yeah. At all.
I know. It didn't interrupt programming, and I'm sure the host got to go pee every now and then.
And when the deal gets done, by the way, the NFL is still producing.
Yeah, nothing's going to change.
Honestly, and if the deal does get done and ESPN takes over NFL Network and turns any NFL Network employee that they're hopefully going to take all of us, Scott Hansen will be the last NFL media employee ever. So, okay. You know what I mean? Like, everybody just... just pipe down about that. Well, how about the Cowboys, Jimmy? Huh? What do you think about your Dallas Cowboys, Jimmy?
Okay, I'll get to Mr. Aubrey in a second because you and I have a beloved hating of Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
And my Aggies put it to the Irish.
Oh, yes, sir.
Shane Gillis, you can suck it.
Whoa.
Hey.
Well, sorry. He's staunch, and I'm a 12th man. So,
okay.
You know, gig him, Shane.
Okay. And listen, Jimmy, you know, normally I would join you in this sort of thing.
But not against you.
Dude, the game-winning touchdown, I mean, the takedown of the defensive tackle that was somehow...
Probably
should have been. Give me a break. And the quarterback standing right next to the takedown hold, and how are you missing that? Good Lord.
I guess I missed it. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. Just like the officials. and then the Cowboys, man, the next day. Look at them, huh? Coming out with it?
Okay, so here's what Jerry Jones is going to do. He's going to make Aubrey the highest paid kicker in NFL history despite Macca.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy in San Antonio, everybody. There you go. There you go. Well, there's a new guy in town. I don't know if we're going to get a drop of Jadeveon.
Macca. Macca.
All right.
That is a great drop.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dallas Cowboys versus the New York Giants.
What a game.
I mean,
did you know? Because this game usually starts the season or they play it on a Monday night or a Sunday night, right? Or it starts the season for either one of them on a Sunday night. It was the first 1 o'clock Eastern game in Dallas between these two. Since Drew Bledsoe beat Eli Manning.
Oh, wow.
Manning, Eli?
Back really? In the day.
What's it, like 2007? In a game that,
wait for it, went to overtime.
Woo.
Just like yesterday's day.
Woo.
And I'll tell you what, game should never have gone to overtime.
No.
Let's just start with one thing first. A mea culpa. I want it all from all of us. You join me in it, I'll join you in it. A sincere apology to Russell Wilson. You've got to conjure it up, Chris. I understand. The tweet that got sent out last week when he put in mentally tough into all of our timelines.
Here we go.
Okay. Everybody thought, okay, it's just like, is that the name of a new Subway sandwich? Like, is he promoting something? Like, what does he mean mentally tough? I honestly thought... When you called that to my attention, it's that the Giants did indeed make the move to Jackson Dart.
Yeah.
Because it looked that bad in week one.
Go Big Blue.
And we all thought Russ, once again, was going to disappoint. We all did. Except, I'll say this. You and, I believe, TJ Jefferson in the What's More Likely segment on Friday, what if Russ balls out?
Ooh.
And you, Chris, said, yeah, but... Really? Do we all expect that to happen? Does any of us expect that to happen? None of us agreed with you, but I think our silence said enough. Russell Wilson, ladies and gentlemen, he was spectacular in Dallas. He was vintage Russell Wilson cooking.
Yeah.
In the 23 years that I've been associated with the National Football League, thanks to my association with NFL Network, I don't think I've ever seen a better thrower of the deep ball than this guy. Aaron Rodgers is included in that regard. You know, Aaron Rodgers is the king of Hail Marys, and guy right next to him is this guy. Deep passing. That's a next-gen stat statistic that we hear all the time. 20-plus yards in the air, deep passes. He was 7 for 11 for 264 yards, 3 passing touchdowns, and a pretty bad interception in overtime. 66 deep pass touchdowns since 2018 now. That's the most in the NFL per the next-gen stats. 10 more than anybody else. And who thought that was going to happen after what we saw in Washington, D.C. last Sunday? Mm. Maybe him and his lovely wife and anybody else in his family. If you put the Giants coaching staff, I'll say it. I haven't spoken to him. I'm just assuming, and we all know what that means. I might be the one who looks like an ass. But you put the Giants coaching staff on sodium pentothal, you put them in a Meet the Fockers basement, and they would definitely... not expect what we saw.
No.
Malik Nabers, a 167 and 2 touchdowns, and Wandale Robinson in the end zone.
Boom!
To put him up, boom. I was watching with Cooper. Was we were both screaming at the game. Television set.
It was a great game.
That's funny.
Cooper was also noticing at the time, because he's Coop. TJ Jefferson, your Mets were in extra innings living on the razor's edge against a team from Texas as well, while the Giants were in overtime with your Cowboys. And so TJ Jefferson was sweating it out.
Shout out Pete Alonso.
Sweating it out. The polar bear got it done, and so did Brandon Aubrey. And that's why this game should never have gotten in overtime. Greg Olson was wondering it, watching the game. He and Joe Davis on the call on Fox. Why are the Giants backing up on defense when Dak had the ball last in regulation? Why are you letting them get close to midfield? You need to make the let. I'd rather be beaten deep. Because you know all Brandon Aubrey has to do is get to one of the points of any of the stars on that star. Doesn't matter if it's one pointing up right at Jerry's box or at the field goal that he's aiming for, or the one pointing in the other direction, or any of the other stars' points. Always got to, you got to get at one point of any of the stars, and it's a bunny field goal for this guy.
He's making it.
Out of any kicker in the NFL who's kicked more field goals from 60 yards, that causes an announcer to say, that would have been good from 70. It's Brandon Aubrey. He leads the league in that stat, if it was such a thing. And the Giants just let him, let Dak just matriculate. What are you doing? Go and get beat deep. And I'm not saying this facetiously at all. I swear to God. When the game was on the line in Philadelphia, Dak and CD couldn't connect deep. Take that chance again. No, they just let him dink and dunk. Let him throw right over the middle so Brandon Aubrey can show up from 60-plus and be good from 70. And then he wins the game. He wins the game. Anyway, Brandon Aubrey, man, this guy is
best in the world.
He is the best in the world. 64-yard field goal as time expired in regulation. Second longest made field goal of his career. He made a 65-yarder, good from 70, against the Ravens in 2024. And his fifth made field goal of 60 or more yards in the final seconds of a game since 2000. The guy, this is what he does. And the Giants just said, do what you do. And then, of course, it fell apart in overtime for him. But it was the first win of Brian Schottenheimer's career as a head coach. And he needed to survive six lead changes in the fourth quarter in overtime. The most such lead changes in fourth quarter overtime in NFL history, so he earned it.
We would try it from 70-ish. I mean, we've seen him make those before. We always want to try to get as close as we can, but he's always like, yeah, I'm good. And, you know, that's pretty cool for Dak's always like, oh, hey, what's the line to make? I'm like, yeah, 50-ish. You know, yeah, 50-ish. He's like, oh, okay, well, that's like a 70-yard field goal. Like, that's cool. So there's really not one. But the confidence that you see the guy kick with is just incredible.
And I showed you earlier the we'll keep bringing it up, the statistical difference between starting 0-2 and 1-1 since playoffs expanded in 2021. 0-2 teams make the playoffs 15% of the time. 1-1 teams, 40%. That was a massive win for the Dallas Cowboys. Massive.
Super necessary.
It was marvelous.
You don't want to drop those division games at home, certainly against a team that you're used to beating. Dak Prescott has now beaten the Giants one gajillion times in a row. Actually, it's 14 wins in his career. Only Roger Staubach has beaten the Giants more, 16.
14 straight wins.
14 wins, not 14 straight wins, sir.
No, it's not?
No. Yeah. The Cowboys have won each of their last nine matchups with the Giants. Dak is now 5-0 in a week two following a week one loss in his career. How about this, TJ? Mm-hmm. The Cowboys have now avoided going 0-2 14 straight years. Second longest such streak in the NFL behind the Packers, 19. And Dak got it done, man. He put the ball in the hands of George Pickens. He put the hands in the ball of CeeDee Lamb and overcame a performance of the ages for Russell Wilson. Dude, do we apologize? We don't apologize. You can't bring yourself to look in the camera and say, I'm sorry, Russ, I didn't think you could do it, but you did it. Because I'll do that. You want me to do it for you? I know you're a prideful man.
They lost.
Okay, I'll do it then. Russell Wilson, on behalf of all of us here at the Rich Eisen Show.
Rich Eisen does not speak for me.
I will speak for you, if you don't mind. You do.
I do.
I'll just speak for myself.
Thank
I am. I doubted you, man. We'll see if he can keep doing it. I don't know if he can. We might see Jackson Dart sooner rather than later. But he showed that there's a passing game, and he can connect it. And holy crap. Holy crap. Fourth time Russell Wilson in his career. Multiple fourth quarter touchdown passes of 30 or more yards. No other player has done it more than twice since Russ came off the campus of Wisconsin in 2012. And he had this to say when asked if he wanted to spike the football on people who said he couldn't do it.
Yeah, I think that you got to respond in the midst of adversity. You know, I think I know how talented I am. You know, I know what I'm capable of. I don't need somebody to convince me of that. I don't need outside praise or criticism to convince me of what I'm capable of. I embrace the noise. I don't run from it. And we got to keep answering the call. Like today we didn't do enough to win. And that's all that matters, is us as a team, us finding a way to win that game. We believe in the guys in this room, the defense battling, the offense battling, special teams. We laid it all on the line. And you can't ask for any more effort and love and passion and energy and work than we just gave. So we have to respond back.
Next up for him is the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. Whole country will see if he can do it again. I'll just say this. That's my concern about your Dallas Cowboys, because Javonte Williams is running it.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way that I didn't see coming. But that back end of the defense, Diggs does not look like himself, man. Doesn't look like himself. And if they're also banged up on the back end, because Trent McDuffie is going to be coming through that door on Sunday night in New York and New Jersey, and we'll see what happens. I proffer to say it'll be a lot tougher for Russ to get done what he got done on Sunday in Dallas. But I just, for the moment, just tip my cap. And
the best thing about us, though, is it's about us.
Which is kind of crazy. Normally you're on the same page.
It was an awesome game. He played phenomenal.
He did.
Feels like a one-off. But if they can do that against Kansas City, they have a chance to beat them.
And then Jackson Dart can just marinate.
And, guys, just to clarify, when I said Dax won 14 in a row, that loss, Andy Dalton started that game. That wasn't a Dak Prescott
gotcha.
Game. So
844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the program. Albert Breer has checked in. Let's take a break so we can check in with Albert. Sports Illustrated and the MMQB, a must-read on Monday. We'll get it verbally best we can coming up.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.
If, like, there's rule breaking on this, or it's hard to officiate in that way, I think that adds another element to it. So I would love to. I think it was Jeff Schwartz, one of the former offensive linemen on Twitter, said something yesterday along the lines of, like, there's false starts on every one of these. And I would actually like to go back and take a good look at that too. Like, is that happening on every one of these? And it's just such a bang bang play that it's impossible to officiate whether somebody's, got a false start. Here's the other part of it.
Yes, Albert Breer.
Here's the other part of it.
Yes.
They're not always pushing Hurts. Like, he doesn't always need the push. So I don't know that, like, the idea of going behind people and going behind the quarterback and pushing him would really materially change the Eagles' desire to do it. I think they would still do it without the people in back pushing.
Hmm.
So do you have to go even further than just having the push-pull rule in there? I don't know. I mean, one thing that was interesting from inside the meeting in March was how, Rich McKay had the president or the chair of the competition committee and the president of the Falcons had explained how when the rule changed in 2004, to allow this, it was actually had nothing to do with what was happening at the line of scrimmage. This was about things happening down the field. And, they thought it was too difficult to officiate this stuff down the field where someone would come flying in and it was hard to tell whether he was blocking an opponent or pushing his own teammate into the end zone. So that's actually why that rule about pushing and pulling a teammate came out of the rule book in 2004, something that had zero to do with what the Eagles are doing.
Albert Breer, Sports Illustrated's MMQB is out there right now. We were just talking, starting on the Disney Plus ESPN app everywhere side, about the tush push from the Eagles-Chiefs game being front and center. And now ESPN Radio, its audience has rejoined us. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Albert here. Let's put a pin in the Eagles and the Chiefs and pull that later on in our conversation. Let's start with Joe Burrow's foot and what's going on with it and how long you really think he's going to be out and what they might do about it. I give you the floor.
I think 3 months minimum. And this is a bad injury. And it's one of those unfortunate, like, it's like unfortunate how it's named, because it doesn't sound that bad, but it is. You know, it's like a high ankle sprain where it's this isn't somebody like stubbing their toe. Like, this is torn ligaments, and he sought second opinions, and you know, now he's gonna have surgery, and it's gonna take him out for 3 months. Now, you know, a couple silver linings here. And the Bengals are 2-0, so they have a little bit of a cushion. If you look at their schedule from now until, and I have it circled, December 14th against the Ravens is, I believe it, yesterday was the 14th, right? So that'd be three months to the day. So December the 14th against the Ravens could be a day they target for a turn. And I just have seen enough of Jake Browning where, could he help them tread water? Like, could they go? Because if they go, because they had that 2-0 cushion now, say they can go 6-5 over that stretch. Now they're 8-5. And if you look at their schedule down the stretch, that Ravens game is a big one, but then it softens up after that. So, you know, I don't think the Bengals season is over. And I think if Joe Burrow is a fast healer with this, and he can get back by mid-December, there is a chance that they're very much in the thick of it. Now the question becomes, at what level do you go get reinforcements, right? Like, if you're the Bengals, because Jake Browning's proved that he can help you tread water. Do you call the Giants about Jameis Winston? Do you call the Falcons about Kirk Cousins? Like, how much are you willing to spend to go and give yourself the best chance, the most important position on the field while Joe Burrow is out? And I think that's an open question. I think they're discussing that today and what their plan's going to be. I would just say this, like, you know, covering the league in the Brady Manning era, you know, I always think about how precious these opportunities are when you've got a quarterback like that, and how it's incumbent on the teams involved when they've got a quarterback like this to make the most out of the opportunities they have. And so I think that's got to be part of the equation here for the Bengals. Is this is, you know, you've got a rare, rare quarterback in Joe Burrow. And if there's a chance he comes back with a shot to make it into the playoffs, then you have to give yourself every chance, every opportunity you can to try and get your team there in mid-December, where you're still playing relevant games at the end of the season.
I mean, it's silly to say, but it's 7 weeks until the trade deadline. So
yeah.
That's a nice month and a half to try and see, you know, what Jake Browning can do. And we've already seen what Jake Browning can do. Not just the last time that Burrow was hurt, but I mean, I understand three interceptions will get you a little scared against the Jacksonville defense.
Yeah,
but Browning still winged
him,
it
though.
Around, man. He winged it around, dude.
I mean, credit to him though, Rich. Like, I talked to him after the game, and credit to him for throwing that pick in the fourth quarter and then turning it around and driving the team 92 yards. And it wasn't like there was a big chunk play there. They just sort of, the old Hank Stram, like, matriculated the ball down the field. And yeah, they had a couple breaks there. There was the DPI on Travis Hunter that converted a fourth down. But I thought Jake Browning showed everything about why the Bengals really like having him around, and that he can step into a situation like that and he can ride bumps out. And you know, I actually think he deserves credit for riding the three interceptions out and being able to lead that 92-yard touchdown drive at the very end. They've got confidence in him in that building. And so, again, I look at their situation. I look at their schedule. I just don't think the season's over, you know. I think you're going to have to, you know, probably pull some upsets. Like, you'll have to split with the Steelers. Both the Steeler games are while Joe Burrow is out. I think that's reasonable to say, like, that will be one requirement. But I think they've got the team to do it if they can continue to improve on defense.
All right, let's move on, Albert Breer, to the team that I mentioned in hour number one is, I guess, of all the 0-2 teams, the one that's the hardest 0-2 might just be Miami, with a team that gets blown out on the road to start the season. 2 days later, they're having a team meeting. And 5 days after that, they lose at home by giving up touchdowns in almost all three phases to a Patriots team coming into a building that they've historically taken care of, even in the Brady era. You know, right. So where do things stand in Miami right now? Certainly with a lot of people talking today about Tua's comments that Tyreek Hill needs to track his ball when he's throwing it, Albert.
Yeah. Well, let me take you inside the players only meeting last week. Like, my understanding is that there was a message from the captains to the rest of the team about accountability. And it was about accountability to each other and accountability to yourself. And more or less, it was the NFL is going to judge you regardless of your circumstances, regardless of your coaching. The NFL is going to judge you in a vacuum, and it's on everybody to take personal responsibility. And it's more or less closing ranks and saying this isn't about anybody else but the players. And sometimes that happens at the end for coaches, you know. So I think, you know, like, that message was received by the people in that by the players in that building. You know, the tough thing, I think, for McDaniel, and I really like Mike as a coach, and I've known him a long time. Like, I think the tough thing for him is this narrative has been there for the last 4 or 5 months, like, that some of the stars in that building ran wild over the last couple of years, and they spent some time this offseason in their roster building trying to clean all of that up, and that you would have this sort of issue after week one, and that sort of no-show in that week one game against the Colts, and now you're 0-2. I think only further fuels the narrative. The other thing that's just lingering out there is the fact that they're in the middle of, you know, a sort of a soft rebuild. You know, Teron Armstead retired. They traded Jalen Ramsey. You know, they've moved now from the phase where they had Tua on the rookie contract into now he's on a big second contract, and so they're going to be gradually relying on more young players over the next couple of years. And when a franchise does that, the natural question for an owner to ask is, are these the people I want leading the rebuild? And so if things don't go well early this year, those questions will naturally come up. So I think all of that is in play. You've got a standalone game. You and I both know how that can affect things against maybe the best team in football on Thursday night in Buffalo. It's a lot, and that's a big spot, I think, coming up this Thursday night for Mike McDaniel. And another thing that's lingering here is the fact that his defensive coordinator, Anthony Weaver, is beloved inside that building and is seen by a lot of people as a future head coach. So if there comes a point where this really goes the wrong way, could Stephen Ross say, I want to take a look at Anthony Weaver as my head coach? I think you could eventually get there. I don't think it'll be after Thursday night, but I think they could eventually get there.
Yeah, I mean, ask Brandon Staley how a blowout loss in division on Thursday Night Football went for him a couple of years ago. But
I mean, it shouldn't be a factor, but it is, right? Like, the owners have to hear that. Like, it's the only game on, and so it becomes bigger than maybe it should be sometimes.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. What message do you think Dan Campbell was sending yesterday, huh? Against the Bears. And where do things stand for both teams?
I mean, what's so interesting about it, though, Rich, is like how like the whole we don't know crap in week one thing actually like kind of came to life with that, because it's like if you put all of those pieces together, okay, the Lions beat up on the Bears, and we thought the Bears were pretty good because they hung with the Vikings, but the Vikings lost, and then maybe the Lions offense looking the way it did in week one was just how good the Packers defense is, because we saw how good that Packers defense looked against the Commanders. So you're sort of putting some pieces together there. Look, like I talked to Jahmyr Gibbs after the game, and I thought the most interesting thing he said was, our problem in week one was communication. And if you think about it, an offense on game day has three main communicators: the quarterback, the center, and the coordinator. And two of those three pieces have been pulled out. Right. So you have, you know, going into Green Bay, if you're Detroit, a new center and a new offensive coordinator with Jared Goff back as the quarterback. You're playing against a defense that is a new piece in Micah Parsons. You have no idea how they're going to use him, and a loud environment at Lambeau. And so, you know, what Gibbs said was, like, our communication was really stressed, and we didn't think we did nearly a good enough job of it. Then they come home. They have this motivation of everybody thinks we're dead now. Johnny Morton's got a game under his belt as the offensive coordinator, and they have an opportunity to really put their foot on the gas. And I think there's this chip on their shoulder too, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I think you heard it when you, if you really listen to what Dan said during the week and after the game, you really heard it. It's like Ben Johnson is great and did an awesome job here. And I think they all respect him. But Jameson Williams is a good player. Amon-Ra St. Brown's a good player. Penei Sewell and Taylor Decker are fantastic tackles. Sam LaPorta is a great tight end. Jahmyr Gibbs is a really good running back. Jared Goff is a quarterback who's gone to conference title games with two different franchises. I think there were a lot of players that felt like this was about us too. This wasn't just about Ben. So I think it was a combination of, you know, the first 2 weeks of the season, the adjustment and communication, and then I think a few guys, at least a few guys in that building, having a little bit of a hair across their ass about some of the perception on on how that whole thing was put together over the last couple of years.
Interesting way of putting it right there. Yeah. Did Russell Wilson?
I don't know if the your Disney Plus. I think this is my first Disney Plus appearance, so I'm not sure if that's okay.
It's all good. I think that line is in Encanto 2 coming up. Did Russell Wilson stave off Jackson Dart? Do we do that or what? What do we got?
Yeah, I mean, I think what people aren't paying enough attention to here is the left tackle. The left tackle situation has really undermined where they thought they would be on the offensive line right now. And, you know, obviously the offensive line didn't play great against the Commanders in week one, which I think screwed some things up offensively. Andrew Thomas is still not back. And they lost him after, I think it was about 6 weeks last year. They felt like their offensive line had made a lot of progress before then. Having talked to people there, I'm not sure how willing they would be to go to Jackson Dart anyway until the offensive line situation is sorted out, until they have their left tackle back. But certainly, I mean, they've felt comfortable with where Jackson Dart is, and there's a quiet confidence to the idea that he could very well play pretty good, you know, as a rookie if they put him in there. And I think they showed that confidence by making him the second quarterback. You don't do that unless you're comfortable putting a rookie in a game. And it looks like, in fairness, like Russell Wilson really responded to a lot of that noise yesterday. So best case scenario for the Giants is that Russell keeps playing well. And, you know, Jackson keeps developing. And, you know, if Jackson looks like he's really pushing him in week 10, week 11, and the team's winning, that's a good problem to have. I do have their schedule up, though. And I pulled this up when I heard you talking about it in the last segment,
yep,
Rich.
Yep.
Kansas City, Chargers, at New Orleans, Philly, mm-hmm. at Denver, at Philly, San Francisco. That's between now and November 2nd.
Right, and at Chicago, and one assumes that an 8-game, run or 9-game run between Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams will eventually start looking like the right Caleb Williams Ben Johnson connection that everyone in Chicago is hoping for, you know, and then
Green Bay
and Detroit, and then New England, which may not be
New England usual. Could be a lot better December 1st than they are now.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know when you would do something like that. I understand. Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. Before we get to the Eagles and Chiefs, before I send you on with the rest of your day, Brock Purdy, is this a 1 week sit down for him? Mac Jones, I know, looked really good. The Niners are 2-0. There's three 2-0 teams in the NFC West, by the way.
I was told 2 to 3 weeks. Okay. So my sense is like maybe it's one of those deals where he gets back out there on the practice field and does light work at the end of the week. But my sense is like that they wanted to sit him out at least 2 weeks and maybe the third week. And this is the less serious version of turf toe than what Joe Burrow has, but I think it sounds like he's going to be okay. And I really like where the Niners are too. I mean, I think, you know, to be 2-0, given the amount of injuries that they've already dealt with and, you know, some of the things they're working through, they won't have Ayuk till week 9 or 10, at least. McCaffrey's been banged up, Kittle's out. And then you look at the amount of young guys they're playing on defense. The cool thing about the Niners right now, I think, Rich, is they could really develop depth over the course of the next 2 months. And the impact that Robert Saleh is having with some of the young players on the defense, they really feel like that's going to take as the season goes on. So they've got a relatively manageable schedule if you look at it. And I think this is a team that believes, like I just said this about New England, I think this is a team that believes it's going to be a lot better come Thanksgiving, come Christmas than it is right now, because the amount of young guys they're playing and the amount of depth they're being forced to develop because of the injuries. So I think Brock Purdy is back probably, if I had to, and this is a rough estimate, I would say week four or week five. And as they start to work some of these injured guys back in, you know, I think the hope would be that they're going to have a deeper team. And Mac Jones is part of that equation, too. You hit the nail on the head there. He played really, really well yesterday in New Orleans.
Before I let you go, Albert, I would be remiss if I did not ask you your impressions of Eagles-Chiefs moving forward. The Chiefs 0-2 for the first time in Mahomes' time. And the Eagles 2-0 again, now moving on to take on the Rams next week. What a big week three game that is. I give you the floor. Yeah. Your takeaways from that big game is what?
So my number one takeaway is, I mean, my goodness, the job that Howie Roseman and Nick Sirianni and Jeff Stoutland have done developing that offensive line and keeping it as one of the strongest units in the league at any position, right? Like, and I say that because I think the Eagles' offensive line influenced the way the last 8 minutes of that game were played. And here's what I mean by that. They were able to churn out that first down, which was ended with a tush push, but they got the 9 yards to get in third and one with a couple of Barkley carries there, right? That allows them to take another couple of minutes off the clock. Then they punted away to the Chiefs. The Chiefs wind up driving the field and scoring, so that makes it 20-17. And here's the key. The Chiefs decided not to kick away, and I believe it's because of the Eagles' offensive line. I believe it's because the Eagles, they did not think that they would be able to stop the Eagles on four straight plays because they thought the Eagles' offensive line would be able to lean on them and get into one of those third and two, third and one situations where you're then able to push that thing over the line and end the game. And that concern wound up becoming justified when, after the failed onside kick, the Eagles did just that. So, I mean, to me, it's so impressive. They've lost a starter every year. They lost, you know, last year, Jason Kelce. This year, they lose Mekhi Becton. But that was the thing that stuck out to me. Even on a day when the offense had less than 250 yards, that offensive line won that game for them at the end. So that'd be number one. The Eagles would be there at the end. We know that. And I'm not counting the Chiefs out yet at all. But my concern would be how much Patrick Mahomes is running right now. I know Mahomes doesn't want to run. Andy Reid doesn't want him to run. I feel like when you see him run this much, as he's run the first couple of weeks of the season, you were there in Brazil for it. It means they don't have the answers right now. Now, I think that they're just, I mean, the same principles I used in talking about the Patriots for 20 years, I use talking about them. I think they'll figure it out. But you know, like, this is going to be a process, and how do you survive and keep your record where it needs to be over the next 6 or 7 weeks so you can get Rashee Rice back, so you can get Xavier Worthy healthy, so you can get Josh Simmons the experience that he needs as your left tackle. I think those are the big things. And I trust that Andy Reid and Matt Nagy and Steve Spagnuolo on the other side of the ball will be able to figure it out. But this is definitely a little bit of a different challenge.
Albert, you're the man. Thanks for the time. Greatly appreciate it. Look forward to our next chat already. Everybody check out the MMQB on Sports Illustrated from the great Albert Breer. You be well, sir.
All right. Thanks, Rich.
That's Bert, everybody, right here, Albert, on the Rich Eisen Show. We'll be back on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, with our live stream on Disney Plus and the ESPN app everywhere after this.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, our friends at Hyundai want to let you know about the Hyundai, all-new Hyundai Palisade. It's an incredible SUV. It's got a spacious interior that's comfy for the entire crew. It can go off-road. And it's over 600-plus miles of range. It's the all-new Hyundai Palisade Hybrid. All that and more. So much more than just another SUV. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. That's 562-314-4603 for more details. Let's talk a little college football, shall we? LSU taking care of business against Florida. Four interceptions for that LSU defense. Boy, Florida, once upon a time, after remember we were sitting here saying after Arch lost to Ohio State,
play Florida.
Wait till they play Florida. It's going to be a big test. Well, First of all, we're talking about Arch against UTEP first and how it still doesn't look like him blowing the doors off for everybody. And I think the Heisman Trophy conversation is definitely finished for Arch in Texas right now. I mean, it's going to take a monumental final 2 months of the season to get him back in that conversation. But anyway, long story short, we bring this up because Brian Kelly didn't like some of the questioning after the game, after they won at home against Florida in front of the whole country. He's feeling good about the way the team went. And somebody was asking him something that wasn't entirely positive about his team. Hit it.
I know you love these immediate post-game sessions, but what are you seeing with your offense?
Stop. Really? Is that the first question? We won the game 20-10. Try another question. What do you want me to tell you? I just laid it out for you. We played the game to win the game. We played the game to win the game.
All right. How about third down then? What is going on with third down?
One game. Last game, we were great on third down. You're looking at this from the wrong perspective. LSU won the football game. Won the game. I don't know what you want from me. What do you want? You want us to win 70-0 against Florida to keep you happy?
No, I think people want to know why you can't run the ball, quite honestly.
We can run the ball. Did you see the last play of the game? That's all you need. You just need one. There's a ridiculous questions. And I'm getting tired of it. That football team just worked their tail off to get an SEC win, and you want to know what's wrong. You know what? You're spoiled. You're spoiled. This team is 17-1 at night. 17-1. Give them some respect. How about that? Give them some respect instead of micro-analyzing every little thing. This is ridiculous. For a group of seasoned reporters, that kind of question is so out of line.
Coach Deshaun Spears, two interceptions tonight. It seems like he's worked into a role on an
important
role.
That's a great question. Thank you.
Oh, my word. That was the only thing that was missing was hello.
I know.
Dave,
you know,
you don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports.
Oh, boy. I mean, instead of you played to win the game, he said we played the game to win the game.
Right.
It's a little bit more wordy than you play to win the game, which is it's not going to look pretty sometimes, but all we needed to do in one moment was just get 2 yards. We don't need to go get 20. And I understand, you know, reporters are like, it's still not clicking. But the reason why... I wonder if he's going to get any blowback for calling them spoiled.
That's what I was just going
to
say.
When you call someone spoiled, although he did also, did you see, he paused to pick and choose the right word to not offend them as to what to call them, what type of reporters. He used seasoned.
Yes. Is that the solid good. When talking about reporters?
Seasoned reporters means that you know it's better. Above. You should know better than to just take the bait of you're having trouble running the ball. When all you needed to do was run the ball well that one time to win the game. And I'm sure the reporters were responsible. If you ran the ball more consistently well, then you wouldn't be hanging on for dear life, potentially. Although LSU is ranked third at 3-0.
32-11
right now.
LSU under Brian Kelly. They are 3-0 in bowl games. But spoiled. They haven't been in the mix to win a title since he's been there.
But this is the SEC.
This guy.
Hey, not in Central Michigan anymore. Cincinnati or even Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You know, even Notre Dame
played for the Natty though at Notre Dame.
LSU's ranked third. Yeah. Hello. That was the only word that was missing. Oh, I think we got ourselves a new rant.
Oh yeah.
And the question about the interceptions was like the Matt Leinart will be next. It's a very, very, you know, we are who they thought they were. Don't worry about it, Mike. We're out of time.
I'm just going to play the Matt.
Hour number two is in the books. Your phone calls in hour number three, and we'll talk about the rest of week number two. We'll get some Vegas stories, what happened there. Not exactly going to stay there from TJ Jefferson, who was there for the prize fight over the weekend.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.